Hi, I'm Mark Brody, and this is the Friday Newscap Podcast. Each week, we review the biggest stories with experts, reporters, and commentators to put the news in perspective. Here's this week's episode.
We feel good about the arguments that were made, and we feel good about the questions that came back from this bench. We are hoping for a positive result.
People are always saying that they wish they had better candidates that would run for office. I don't think that's true, because when good people run for office just because I want to serve my community, and then this is what happens to me, why would anyone want to run?
Regarding this project specifically, where the project is supposed to go, nobody wants it.
It was an overwhelming victory to the point where there is no real reason, no logical reason, why the 800,000 constituents of Congressional District 7 of Arizona are lacking that representation.
They've created an ideologically pure group on both sides who are voters who are not only grievance voters, but their single greatest grievance is this: they hate the other side.
And joining me to talk about the results from this week's elections, an endorsement in a contested congressional primary, and more, our former state lawmaker, Regina Cobb. Regina, good morning.
Good morning.
And Jason Barraza of Veritas. Jason, good morning to you.
Good morning to you.
Regina, let me start with you. Obviously, big elections this week. Some of the bigger elections, bigger contests were outside of Arizona, and we'll talk about that in just a moment. But we heard just a second ago from Julie Spilsbury speaking with 12 News. Now former Mesa, or soon to be former Mesa City Council member. This was a really interesting race. It got a lot of national attention for a Mesa City Council recall election. Turning Point USA, of course, was behind, put a lot of resources into this and was in many ways behind the recall. I'm curious what you make of the result and maybe what it means specifically for Turning Point going forward.
I think you're going to see this as we go into the election year. Turning Point has increased its membership and has increased its footprint in politics. It was mainly Arizona and some, you know, around the nation. There were others, but mainly in Arizona. But ever since Charlie Kirk's incident, it is just exploded. And I think that their influence is going to be a little bit bigger now in all across the nation, not just in Arizona.
So, Jason, if you are of the mind that you do not like what Turning Point stands for, how do you try to counteract that?
Well, you got to talk about what they're doing. And for the race here, I mean, look, they're stepping out and they're speaking against bipartisanship, right? You have an individual who is a Republican who stepped forward and said, I'm going to endorse these candidates because that's what I believe in. And now you have Turning Point that stepped forward and said, nope, that's not going to cut it. We don't believe that that's what you should be a representative of the Republican Party if that's what you're going to stand for. And they held her accountable. That's politics. That should be a consideration that all electeds have when they're stepping forward. And you should certainly have an organization like Turning Point who is going to hold people accountable for the politics that they believe in.
Do you think, Regina, I mean, we've heard that Turning Point is looking to get into, you know, sort of down ballot races. This is obviously sort of a down ballot race, a city council race. They're talking about, you know, spending resources on the SRP board elections, which is really down ballot. You mentioned how Turning Point has increased its membership. Obviously, you know, they've brought in a lot more money and donations since Charlie Kirk's assassination. Do they have, I mean, this maybe is a silly question, but do they have the resources to do what they want to do on the national level and also focus on down ballot races in a place like Arizona?
I think they do. I think they have the resources, especially now. I think they have the resources. I would say prior to that, they didn't. I think they needed to focus on the national races and then maybe state races, but not down ballot races. I think they have the resources now. It's a scary thing to think that, you know, you just what Jason said, that it's a bipartisan person, somebody that is a Republican but has done some Democratic moves and moved to the left on some issues. And because of our votes, we're going to have somebody like Turning Point that's going to go against them. I don't disagree with some of the things that they stand for. But I do disagree with influencing the elections the way they have.
Well, Jason, you mentioned bipartisanship. Do you think that this result and maybe the fear that it could strike in elected officials and other offices, like, could this do something to make bipartisanship even less common than it is now at all levels of government?
Yeah, I don't even know if it exists right now in Arizona politics or national politics because people have been held accountable for it for so long. Look, Turning Point in what they're doing, this conversation of do they have the resources, do they available, this is a conversation that political parties normally have, right? Do they have the resources? Do they have the time to spend their money in large races, small races? You know, decisions need to be made about where to have those resources, and that's usually the purview of our political parties. Turning Point is really stepping in with that ground game that we've kind of lost in a lot of our political parties. And they're coming forward and they are expending the resources. They are putting the bodies forward to have an impact. And that impact is what is going to need to be taken into consideration by certainly Republican members or Republican elected officials.
And I think we're going to see this in the governor's race. You look at Andy Biggs and Karen Taylor-Robeson and Swigert right now.
Mm-hmm.
I think that you're going to see them play a big piece in that.
Well, and Turning Point has endorsed Andy Biggs already.
They have. But they've already put money behind him too.
Mm-hmm. Regina, before we move on from this, I want to get your response to what we heard from Julie Spilsbury. As a former elected official yourself, I'm curious what you think about when you hear her say, basically, people say they want better candidates, but then look what happens when we try to do what we think is right.
I can't disagree with Julie. I think she is a good candidate and probably represented a lot of what I represented when I was a candidate. And I think that you're going to see less of that. You're going to see where people, when they get into office, they're going to try to figure out how they can get endorsed, how can they can get the money. When they do that, they usually lean to the right and to the left. They don't go to the middle. I think we need more of that in the middle, and I don't know how we get back there.
Jason, there's been so much attention on the other races around the country, the New York City mayor's race, the Virginia, New Jersey governor's races, a few others. And it's sort of universally accepted right now. The conventional wisdom is Tuesday is a really, really good day for Democrats, good night for Democrats. I'm wondering if you think there are any lessons that Arizona Democrats can learn from what we saw on Tuesday.
I think that some of the lessons that are out there are lessons that our successful Democrats here have already kind of learned. If we're looking at Virginia, we're looking at New Jersey, it was the moderate candidates that won on kind of that statewide race. They brought forward a pro economic agenda. They stayed in the middle of the lane. And I think Arizona Democrats have already been doing that. If you look at our statewides, that's the position that they've been taking. Certainly in the New York City mayor's race, you had a candidate that could be more progressive, could be more liberal. They did that and they survived. They won. That should have been what you would have expected to see in a very progressive, very liberal race.
Yeah, I guess, Regina, it's clearly not an apples-to-apples comparison here because New Jersey and Virginia and certainly New York City, far more Democratic than is Arizona. But I wonder if, you know, if Republicans in Arizona look at these results and say, maybe next year's not shaping up so well for us.
I think that we need to always be on your heels. You need to always be looking at yourself as if you're running, I'm running in last place and I got to make myself go into first place. I think you cannot take anything for granted. And the Republicans should look at that. It's not any different than the last time Trump was in office mm-hmm. and then a midterm election happened. It's exactly the same. So you got to change your tactics and move towards what is successful.
And a year in politics is, as we all know, like an eternity. I mean, it's forever in politics. But, I mean, do you see, you know, momentum for Democrats from Tuesday that could potentially carry over to 2026?
They should, but I don't see the Democrat Party being so organized that they're going to be able to do that. I think that they have a difficult time as it is. They should be able to have momentum going into this. I don't see it happening.
I like how you're channeling your inner Will Rogers there. We famously said, I don't belong to an organized party. I'm a Democrat, right? Jason, do you see momentum? I guess what do Democrats have to do maybe is the question to capitalize on the momentum they had and keep it going for another year?
Well, I hope that they're paying attention nationally at kind of the issues and the topics that were discussed here and that we're successful, right? Democrats need to start talking about the economy more. When that happened, they were able to be successful. And I hope that more pick up on that going into the midterm. It is set up. We're expecting to see a Republican downturn. That's what happens in the midterm election. The factor here that I think that is important to keep in eye is President Trump, right? He turns everything on its head. Will we see a decline in Republican support in the midterm? Who knows? Trump may be able to change that. Hopefully, from my perspective, no, he isn't. We see a downturn in support for the Republicans, and the Democrats have positioned themselves perfectly with a pro-economic agenda that they can take advantage of that.
I guess the one caveat to that, though, are voter registration numbers, right, where Republicans have far outpaced Democrats over the last number of months and years, right?
Well, they certainly have. I think that where Democrats can get a little solace there and find a little bit of protection is just because the numbers are increasing, there's still a lot of Republicans out there that haven't accepted the Trump and MAGA agenda fully. They're willing to now go to have a split ballot where we used to complain about Democrats would split their ballot all the time. I think we're starting to see more of that in kind of that moderate Republican that's out there.
Very briefly, before we go to break, I want to ask each of you if you are in any way surprised that the bond and override in the Tolleson district failed, given sort of all the questions that have been and controversy that have been swirling with that district.
Absolutely not. If that bond had passed, I would be so disappointed in the voters for that. I think there's too much controversy, and they haven't even turned over the finances. So you don't know what they're doing. And to build a huge stadium the way that they wanted to do with the bond, if the voters would have passed that, I would have been 100% surprised.
Jason, surprise for you?
No, not at all. The economy is still forefront at the voters' mind. I think that is an indicator here. So you put in that in light of you have a district that isn't fulfilling some obligations. Why would they support something like that?
Regina, let me start with you in the CD5 GOP primary. This is the seat that Andy Biggs is vacating to run for governor. President Trump this week endorsed Mark Lamb, the former Pinal County sheriff. This is, of course, a contested primary. How significant is that for Sheriff Lamb? And I guess maybe the second half of that question, do you think that will be the only endorsement in that race that President Trump gives?
I do think it's going to be the only endorsement that he gives, but he gave a semi endorsement for Feely. If you looked at that,
to run for something else or
something
do something else.
Yeah, they didn't even mention Grantham, which is I think him and Feely are about even right now as far as the polls go. So I don't know. I don't think he's going to endorse anybody else. I think he'll continue just having the one endorsement. Just pushing Feely off to say, hey, you need to run for something else so that you don't take the votes away from Lamb.
And in a district like that, I would imagine, I mean, it's a very, very conservative Republican district. I would think the Trump endorsement probably, does that seal it for Mark Lamb?
It gives him a big push forward, and he already had a big push forward. He has name recognition where the other two didn't. And so I think that his name recognition from the Senate race was probably put him ahead right away.
How big of a push, Jason, do you think the Trump endorsement gives to Sheriff Lamb?
Oh, I think it's huge and it's completely necessary in a Republican primary. It's something that has to be had. I'm surprised that we've seen it given so freely to others in the past where we're even having a conversation about whether or not another endorsement is going to be made. I would have assumed that the Trump organization would be smart enough to protect that endorsement to their fullest ability and be very sparring in where they give it out. But yeah, I'm surprised that Mr. Grantham hasn't had more of a conversation about him and being one of the few people who's actually kind of won in the district itself that's there. And we always forget about the kicker. Well, why are we always forgetting about, paying attention to the kicker out there? We'll see what happens in that.
And Grantham has the experience, too.
Yep.
And
he's had a couple stints in the legislature.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And he's been, our rules chairman, speaker pro tem. He's had some major roles in the legislature, and yet he wasn't even mentioned.
So, Regina, what do you think Jay Feely does? He was basically told, I like you, but don't run in this race.
I think he's going to probably watch it for the next few months and then see where his numbers go. If the numbers stay under 10, where they're at right now, I would suspect that he would get out of that race. It's hard fundraising if you don't have a lot of numbers behind you, and he's going to have a difficult time raising funds.
If he gets out, do you think he runs for something else?
I would suspect he would. And he seems to be a political guy. I would suspect that he's probably going to run for something else. Hopefully, you know, he's getting into a lane that he can actually win in.
Jason, you're nodding your head. Do you think, assuming that Feely gets out of this race, does he run for something else? And maybe does he even run for something else this cycle?
Yeah, I would hope that he keeps his name in. I hate it when people put their name in, get civic orientated, and then they pull it back. So, you know, I hope he stays in this whole endeavor in whatever he is doing. But whether or not it's this cycle or not, I haven't actually looked at the area, so I don't know what races are going to be popping up and available. But if he does, in fact, drop out of this race, take the time, look at what's out there, and then start putting in the work today to make that a soft landing, and then you are the de facto candidate for that race in the future.
I mean, there is an open congressional seat just a little bit away, right? Like the CD1, this race that David Schweikert is also vacating to run for governor. Do either of you see a possibility of Feely running for that this year or next year?
I would say not. I think that's a long – if he's not going to be able to make it in this congressional district, why would he move over to congressional district 1? And you have Gina Swoboda and you have Dr. Shaw, both Representative Shaw, both running in that district that are strong people. I think it's going to be difficult for him to find his way into another congressional district. I think he needs to either do a state office or run in his city councils.
Mm. Jason, do you agree with that?
A down ballot race would be good. Congressionals are hard, especially when they're going to be crowded. And in CD1, you're probably going to have a very competitive general election. Don't know if it's the right fit for a first-time candidate.
Okay. So, guys, we are in uncharted territories on the federal level. This is the longest federal government shutdown that this country has ever had. And perhaps for some percentage of the population, this week is going to be a big test of how they feel about it when their flights get canceled or significantly delayed. Regina, is this the kind of issue that can sort of speed up negotiations?
Absolutely. It's already starting to. When they said you got to cut 10%, everybody thinks, oh, 10%, that's not sound. It's huge.
It's a lot of flights.
It's a lot of flights. And it's going to be a flight that affects every family. And I think when it starts affecting all the families, especially the families of the congressional and Senate people in Washington, D.C., when they start seeing that, because Reagan is one of the airports that's going to be taking a cut, just like Sky Harbor is.
Jason, is this maybe a potential deal maker for Republicans and Democrats?
Every tick of the clock, we're getting closer and closer to Thanksgiving. There's a lot of holiday travel that's coming up. There's going to be a lot of angry constituents if this isn't fixed by that time.
I mean, I'm the only reason I'm maybe mildly skeptical is there are a lot of folks who are saying come the beginning of the month when SNAP benefits went away, that would be the issue that would bring the sides together. And as we've seen, I mean, Regina, yes, there have been negotiations, but there's still no deal. We're a week into November and still really no clarity on what's going to happen with these SNAP benefits or people who have been getting them that aren't getting them. I guess maybe back to the point you guys were both making at the beginning about bipartisanship, like, is it possible at this point to get the sides together to come to a deal that everybody can live with?
Well, and I just read this morning that is starting to happen. Some from each party are coming together and trying to make their own little budget plan. And I think that's what needs to happen. I don't think you can sit on the sidelines on either side, and that's what's happening right now is they're sitting on the sidelines waiting for someone to make the first move. Who's going to take the first shot? And you can't do that. We'll sit here, into the first of the year without with the closure.
Yeah.
So I don't think that it's out of the question that over the next week we'll probably see a little bit more movement.
Okay. Over the next week, Jason, is that a reasonable timeline, do you think?
It is for agreement amongst the members of Congress. The problem here is that the Republican Congress needs to have the Trump seal of approval on anything that's done, and that could complicate this. So while I actually have faith that the members of Congress could probably come together and find an agreement, I don't know if the Trump administration is going to sign off on it.
I mean, I guess you also have, while the Senate is working in a bipartisan way, the House has been on recess for I don't even know how long at this point. And Speaker Johnson has not suggested that he's super interested in doing anything other than having the Senate pass the continuing resolution the House passed. Does that potentially change if the Senate passes something that maybe does have the presidential seal of approval and could end the shutdown? Does the House come back and maybe deal with that, even though the leadership doesn't really want to?
Even though the leadership doesn't want to, you still have Trump that wants it. If he ends up going with the Senate proposal, I think the House will come back.
Do either of you think some of the issues with social safety net programs and the stuff we're seeing with airlines and everything, do people's memories last long enough for that to matter come 2026 when they're voting?
I think it does. I think
it doesn't. I don't think it gives enough time to start correcting it afterward, right? We're already in a time where people are like, I thought that voting for the MAGA agenda was going to fix the economy, and I'm still hurting, and I don't feel better about myself and the world. What's going on? And I don't think that that's going to change now between now and the midterm elections.
And somewhat agreement with him. I think that people still think about what the economy was like prior to this. And it might not be fixed, but it's on its way to being fixed. And I think there's a lot of things that go into factors when you're voting. And the difficulty we're having right now, they might not remember the specific issues, but they're going to remember how they felt during this time.
Well, it kind of raises the issue, Regina, that, and Jason alluded to it, of maybe the issue isn't so much that more and more people are voting Democratic. It's that there might be fewer people who voted for President Trump and Republicans in 2024 bother to vote if they're not as excited about the way things are going or the way that Congress is behaving or the way the president is behaving.
Well, if the president behaves poorly or the economy is doing poorly, I would think that would bring voters out. I don't think they're going to be complacent during that time. That's usually what brings them out.
Okay. We'll have to leave it there. Regina Cobb, Jason Barraza, thanks to you both. I really appreciate it.
Thank you.
You've been listening to the Friday Newscap from KJZZ's The Show. It's an original podcast recapping the week's biggest stories with experts, commentators, and reporters. You can get the full show podcast at podcast.kjzz.org. I'm Mark Brody. Thanks for listening.